Hello and welcome to episode 15 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. We've covered the topic of frontline employees a number of times on the show before, but I think it's an area that's always worth revisiting. By frontline employees, we're talking about people who are often deskless, they're working out in the field, they're not traditionally working in front of a computer or a laptop, and they have limited access to communications because of their remote working or just of the fact that they're away from the main office. So there has recently been a report produced by our guest on today's show, which is called The State of Frontline Internal Communications in 2024. And there's some fascinating insights from the report that we're going to be exploring in this episode. And just as a flavour for that, we're going to be looking at how do we get the balance right between content and delivery, which is always a perennial challenge with internal communicators. Do we need to maybe think about the fact that we've got too many channels of communication, and or do we need to expand our different channels of communication? There's always a dilemma there in terms of diversifying or concentrating our communications. The fact that communications, particularly for frontline employees, has a huge impact on their perception of the culture of the organization, we're going to explore that. And then finally, we're going to come to something that we've communicated about on numerous occasions and we probably are all still aware of and surprised that it's still around, but that equally still not surprised is the fact that we are still over-reliant on email, and that has a particular impact on frontline employees, and we're going to explore why that is the case. So that's what we're going to be looking at in this episode, the state of frontline employee communications in 2024 and some of the insights from this great piece of research that our guests have done. My guest today is Ben Collier. Ben is the co-founder of Ocasta Engage, who specialise in knowledge sharing, training, comms and communication technology for frontline teams. Ben has many years of experience in mobile app and website development, and he is also an ambassador for E2E, which is a platform for connecting high-growth entrepreneurs. So hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great, Craig. How are things today?
Oh, good. Thank you. And just for our listeners who are all over the world, tell us whereabouts you are in position you in the world at the moment.
Yeah, so I'm down in sunny Brighton in the UK. So that's about 50 miles south of London. So by the seaside, hopefully we won't have the seagulls trying to get involved in the conversation today.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely. Lots of seagulls in Brighton from memory. Excellent. So today we are going to be having a look at some work that your team have put together, your organization's put together, which is the State of Frontline Internal Communications in 2024, a report. And we're going to put links in at the end of the show notes on this on the website copy where you can download a copy of the report. Before we dive into the detail, Ben, you want to just tell us a little bit about where the report came from, who you've spoken to pull together the data, and then we'll go in to have a look at what the kind of four main sections of the report were.
Yeah, of course. So as you mentioned, we specialize in kind of communication apps for frontline teams, but what we found is there wasn't like a lot of resources tailored for frontline communications. And quite frankly, people at the frontline are the hardest people to reach in these organizations. So we took some time to go out and speak to some people working with these large frontline teams to get a view of their challenges, the kind of best practices that they were doing, as well as the opportunities that they see in internal comms and specifically for the frontline. So that was the approach we took. We sat down, proper interviews, proper conversations. Obviously, you've got the likes of Gallagher, who do a great job of surveying kind of thousands of internal communication professionals, but we wanted to keep it a bit smaller and get those kind of real world tactics and insights instead of just lots of big stats and numbers.
Yeah, excellent. And yeah, I mean, it's probably maybe worth just highlighting what we mean by frontline employees, because I guess, you know, nominally everybody could say we've got frontline employees, but I think there's a specific definition that we really want to make sure is clear on this, Ben. Could you just give me your definition of what a frontline employee is, please?
Yeah, of course. So people at the front line, typically those will be staff in retail stores, kind of in travel, hospitality, healthcare or insurance teams. And I think the common theme across all of them is that they're often the face of every organization. So whether that's someone that's coming into your home to install your broadband that you ordered online, or the kind of smiling face at a retail store as you walk in there, or a call center employee who answers the phone when you phone up with a complaint. So ultimately, anyone kind of interacting with customers, and in a lot of cases, they're the kind of, as I say, the face of the organization, and how they make that customer feel is often how that business will succeed. So we find that they're the most important people, but because they're out at the front line, typically the technology and the techniques that are used to communicate with them aren't up to scratch, and they'll often feel isolated and struggle.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. That's and it's a topic we've covered before, but obviously, you know, your research, I think, shines a new light on different areas. I guess just before we go into then the details, so I mean, I guess there are maybe people who are listening thinking, well, I haven't got frontline teams, so I'm thinking there probably are still some transferable learnings for people who maybe don't sort of think that they have a group of people who will fall into that definition, Ben.
Yeah, 100%. I always say if you can make it work for the frontline teams, then it will definitely work for those that are sat at a desk all day long as well. And the frontline, obviously, they've got those unique challenges being far away from head office, but a lot of those challenges still ring true when you are sat at a desk all day.
Yeah. And while you're talking of challenges, what are some of the other challenges that people will probably find when we're looking at frontline employees, and particularly with communicating with them?
Yeah, I mean, the big one is obviously there's very few kind of time, they're very time bound. So if you think about our jobs, and most internal communicators, most of your job is sat in front of a desk, looking at your emails, looking at a screen all day long. Whereas for those at the front line, things like email are nothing but an inconvenience for them. Mm. They've got an actual job to be doing all day long. So I think that's one of the kind of key challenges that we found across all of the different parts of the report. Time is always going to be one of the areas that it comes back to. But then there's also that disconnect and that feeling of not being part of something that's going on in head office when you might be a lone worker, not kind of spending time with colleagues all day long.
Definitely. Okay, yeah, that's really helpful, I think, just to kind of tee things up. So I think your report has four key areas. Well, I know your report has four key areas. Do you want to just maybe just signpost those, and then we'll delve in a little bit more detail of what you've found at each of those in each of those areas?
Absolutely. So one of the very common themes we saw was that it's actually important to spend less time on the content and more time thinking about how it's going to be delivered to the frontline teams. And kind of as part of that in the next section was around kind of going beyond just communicating and finding other methods to get that information out to the front line. A big one, as I kind of alluded to a minute ago, which is the kind of communications is the only connection between head office and the front line a lot of the time. And that means communications is really important in how that culture is built. And lastly, still seeing a big over-reliance on email. I mean, this always comes with its issues, but of course, as we've mentioned, at the front line, that's a particular challenging area where they're not looking at their inbox all day long.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, they're all very pertinent, I think. You know, they'll certainly resonate with the clients I work with. So let's dive in then. So that first one you mentioned around was spending less time on the content and more considering delivery. So let's tell us a little bit more about why what are your some of the conclusions that the people that you interviewed came to around that area?
So I'm sure you find this, Craig, but there's internal communications professionals are often really great writers with a journalism or marketing background. But I think that can sometimes lead to some bad habits. And I suppose it's best to compare it to something like when you're looking online for a recipe, you often find you have to scroll through all of that kind of life story about that particular person and how they came up with that recipe and all of these important bits. But actually, you just want to get to the point. You want to know what ingredients do I need and what are the steps to make this? And I think what we found from doing the report was that's still often the case. There's lots of work creating these perfect comms that are really well written, but ultimately the people at the front line don't have the time to read them. And if they do, they just skim through it and we'll have that same frustration that we might have when we're looking for a recipe of just, can you just get to the point? I've got a job to do here. And so one of the techniques that a few of the interviewees had was the idea of looking to the frontline management teams to actually support delivering these comms. But that comes with more challenges as well, which was those frontline managers were nowhere near as excited about the communications, perhaps, as the writer was in head office when they were putting it together. And then that led to another problem, which was that when these comms landed, sometimes it would catch those frontline managers off guard and they would find it out at the same time as the rest of the organization. But of course, they're the ones that are asked all the questions. They don't, these frontline teams don't get on the phone to head office or send an email to head office. They speak to their manager. What's all this about? And then the frontline manager has to say, well, I know as much as you do. So that was kind of the, some of the common areas around that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All of that kind of resonates with me. I remember it takes me back to my days of being thrown at the deep end with managing people, and I'm going back to the days of where it used to be the team briefs. There was no technology really available then, and I remember one of my managers always used to say to me, he had this little mantra, which was the core is bore, be vocal with the local, which was, I'll just skip past those bits that are all about the kind of corporate stuff and just tell them about stuff that they're worried about, like holidays and shift patterns and that sort of thing. And whilst not necessarily, adhering to that, I think, he was onto something there in terms of, getting those core corporate messages across can be really, really difficult. And they are more interested in the local stuff. So it's how you make that more compelling. And I totally understand what you're saying there as well. That sort of, oh my goodness, I'm kind of finding this out at the same time as you. And I'm expected to be professional and corporate and that cabinet responsibility piece. And yet I'm a bit taken aback myself, which is never a good thing. So you mentioned there that the messages delivered by frontline staff can resonate more. Why is that? What are some of the reasons that is still the case that we tend to, not necessarily believe, but we tend to kind of feel more reassurance when the person who's telling us that stuff is someone we know and identify with?
Yeah, so I think this comes down to the social identity theory, which is that people respond better to messages that are from their peers and their colleagues, more so than the head office approach. So we've had people that we interviewed giving us some good feedback that they would do things like town hall meetings or huddles, but they'd actually have them led by the frontline staffs themselves who would be delivering those messages. And I think that helps avoid a bit of a kind of us versus them situation. I remember being in the gym a few weeks ago and they just had a new changing room installed with these beautiful white flooring through it. And the gym manager was there sweeping up all of the mess that was getting on the white floor. And I kind of looked at him, gave him a nod to say that must be a pain. And he said, oh, the people in head office have never stepped foot in a gym. That's why they picked the white floor. It looked good on their screen, but they never thought about me having to clean up the mess. So I think it's about making sure you're kind of staying connected with the frontline, but also getting the frontline involved in delivering those messages.
So what were the conclusions from that, Ben? I mean, what can IC teams do to recognize that challenge and not just kind of be tone deaf and not mindful of the fact that those are still enduring issues, i.e. better comes from your line manager, but also that people at the front line are have all of these challenges that we've just talked about at the beginning there.
Yeah, so one of our respondents or one of our interviewees really kind of delved into a very simple technique, but it's worth bringing out, which is that they'll simply send out a different version of the comm early to the team leaders to give them a heads up, letting them know tomorrow we're going to announce this new product range or this new policy. Here's your FAQs. Here's the five things that you need to know. Here's some questions that we expect will come up. Here's how to answer them. And then obviously that gives them that heads up and avoids I know as much as you.
Yeah.
and of course it doesn't work well for things that might be more sensitive, but in that approach, they can always kind of target their communications and make sure, even if it has to go live at the same time, they're giving some additional details and additional support to those frontline managers from there as well.
Great. Great. Excellent. Anything to add on that before we move on to the next section?
No, I think we've covered that quite nicely there. And I think just to go back to the not making things too long, I remember hearing the phrase, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And I think that's something that rings true for when you're putting these comms out and trying to find some time to actually think, how will this be delivered by the frontline?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. That's a good adage. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to put the second area then, which was the expanding forms of communication. And I guess a question for me, is that like omni-channel or is that something different?
So not quite. For me, I think omni-channel is more about building that awareness, but it doesn't actually help build an understanding. So think of it like advertising. You've got the new iPhone comes out, there's billboards everywhere, there's TV ads, it's on the radio. Everyone knows there's a new iPhone that's come out, but actually they don't really know that much about it. So what we've always done with our customers with our Acasta Engage app is have a three-step approach to making sure that staff actually have an understanding at the front line. So obviously communication is still a key part of that, but we see it as time for internal communicators to go a bit beyond that and actually look at embedding an understanding of vital information and doing more things like training and micro-learning to make sure their staff have a deep understanding of the things that you just need them to know inside out. But then, of course, you also need to be there at the point of need. So you don't have to have staff remembering everything. You just want to make sure there's good resources they can lean on when they need them to get that kind of understanding. So when we say about expanding the methods to go beyond communicating, that was a common theme that we saw that people were struggling at, which is they were putting out lots of comms, they were putting out through lots of different channels, but staff kind of had a bit of a knowledge gap at the front line where you would see that they actually aren't doing the things we've asked them to do.
And I guess that raises a really interesting question, which is a common one, and which is around where are the boundaries of internal comms and L&D and organizational development and HR and all of these areas where it's like over lots of overlapping Venn diagrams. And what are your thoughts on that? And what was maybe some of the things that came out in the data or in your interviews that shone a light on that as well?
Yeah, so what I always think about is that the front line don't see an org chart when they look at the business. They just see the business. And I think we need to think less about the teams and more about the needs of the front line. And kind of as I alluded to, that IC professionals should be looking kind of more towards being knowledge enablers as opposed to just communicators. I think L&D in particular is where there's the most overlap. And I actually find that L&D teams and internal comms teams usually actually know the most about what's going on at the front line. So I think they're both in a really strong place to be the problem solvers for the issues that are coming up. I suppose where we see the area kind of having a hard stop is when something ends up going on, say, the learning management system instead of through the internal comms app. And obviously the learning management systems often aren't really fit for the front line as well. There'll be a 45-minute course about GDPR for someone who's only got 5 minutes in between customers coming in to understand what's going on. So for us, it's more about you've got a comms that needs to go out. Actually, what do you want your staff to know at the end of that? It doesn't need to be a SCORM course uploaded to a learning management system. It's just some quick questions and a quick health check. And I think that helps internal comms teams actually understand whether the knowledge they're sending out is actually being received. Obviously, you can send a comm out, you can look at the read rates, you can look at whether people are opening it, are they engaging, are they commenting? But actually, unless you're asking them some questions, you don't know, have they actually understood it?
No, I think that's a really, really good way of putting it. And I think, you know, I totally with you on that. I think that it's the more overlap and embracing that overlap there is, I think, and rather than drawing lines, you know, kind of reaching out and working across those different specialities. I think there's so many things in common. You know, designing a great learning intervention is very similar to designing a great comms program as well. You know, you should be objective driven, outcome driven, and therefore, you know, I think a lot of the special technical skills are very congruent. So I think that's really important.
I'm actually seeing kind of large organizations that are going through maybe some reorgs and downsizing based on the economic climate. I've actually taken it as the opportunity to say internal comms, L&D knowledge, these things need to be brought closer together. So of course, never a fan to hear about redundancies and downsizing, but kind of promising to hear that organizations are seeing the opportunity to get these teams working closer together as part of it.
Definitely, definitely. Just I guess on a link to that is the, and we're going to be covering this on another episode, and just your thoughts around Meta's workplace closing down, and you know, that's been a kind of a go-to for a lot of organizations, not always 100% you know, kind of fully embraced. But what are your thoughts around that?
For me, the employee social networks have always been a great resource for the frontline to communicate and engage with each other, but not necessarily to be a place where internal comms teams should be putting out the kind of bread and butter communications they're doing all day long.
Hmm.
We hear lots of stories of people putting out an important comm they need everyone to have read, but then on things like Meta Workplace, it would get sandwiched between a Ped of the Week selfie or Ped of the Week competition and a selfie from someone out visiting a store that day. And it was really hard to kind of fight for attention and cut through the noise there. But that said, I think they've been a great tool for getting people at the front line to feel closer to each other. So, yeah, I think for a little while, it's going to cause some headaches and some issues. But I think, it helps people rethink their strategy, take a look at what they need to do. Actually, was that the right place to be putting out all of their comms, or should they be using the social networks to almost guide people back to a trusted resource where, you know, if this is on this system, this is the truth.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, then moving on to the third area that you mentioned and that your report looked at was this idea that communications builds culture. And I think, I'm a massive believer in that, you know, particularly when you look at organizational change, any change model, there'll always be a huge part of that, which is if we're going to shift our culture, we need to get the comms right and it needs to be congruent with the new culture. I guess yours is, you know, specifically looking at the front line. What is it that's so critical about that cultural piece when it comes to comms for a frontline audience, Ben?
Yeah, I think it comes to that point, which is for the frontline employee, the kind of comms is their connection with head office. In a lot of cases, they might be that lone worker out doing door-to-door sales. There might be someone working with just a couple of other people in a shop, and actually if you're not careful, it's that the culture disappears. So what we found is they'll often, people might be posting on things like Meta Workplace, sharing about the fun they're having in head office. I've been in head offices when they've sent an ice cream truck there on a sunny day to keep everybody happy and excited, and that will all be posted about on the internal social network. But then you've got some poor frontline employee kind of working on a pop-up sales stand out in the sun all day long, who no one's bringing them an ice cream. So I think that's where it's both being mindful of what's that connection with head office, but also and kind of avoiding things that are happening in head office having a bad look for those at the front line, and treating those at the front line equal. Whether that's, I mean, even just taking the moment to think, oh, we've spent all this money to get a fancy ice cream van, maybe we should send a voucher out to the staff at the front line to go and get it. And again, it sounds silly talking about an ice cream, but little things like that chip away at the culture at the front line. So it's about taking those opportunities to get the most out of that. And in terms of the communications itself, it kind of comes back to that first point, which was leaning more on frontline staff to deliver more of the frontline comms. That can help build the culture, but you just have to make sure that those helping deliver that are well trained and given the best practices on how to share this information and keep it from there. So really, we didn't have any glean kind of fantastic new insights that came out of this, other than it was something everyone was aware of. They're trying to do more with it, whether that's kind of team huddles. Although I'm always a bit skeptical that huddles and town hall meetings work that well for frontline teams. You can't expect them to take 30 minutes away from their job to watch a recording of something that happened. And of course, you've got people that work part-time who might only work 4 hours a week in a retail shop. You can't count on them to spend an eighth of their time catching up. So I think this is one of the unanswered challenges, where there's lots of small things you can do, but there's no magic, let's just do this and all of a sudden the culture works. But as I'm sure you know, Craig, that's the challenge with culture. It's this kind of invisible being that's ultimately really powerful.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, there's a number of different ways that I think the how you communicate is a leading indicator for what people glean as what's important. I mean, obviously, the fact that you invest in it and you see it as a priority and you want to keep people informed, it's one of those things you can never do enough of. You're always, you know, it's, you can never communicate enough. There's always more you could do, and people always are left feeling we don't get told enough. But like you, it's like your best is the enemy of the good analogy earlier. I think it's a case of, you know, just it's making sure that you do dedicate time to it and training your managers to be good communicators. I think it's one of the things that just often gets overlooked. People, you know, kind of value technical capability over leadership capability in all sorts of areas. And where it really comes back to bite you, I think, is where you don't kind of promote or encourage people to get better at communicating, and particularly with frontline people, because for them it's the key contact, it's the key touch point they have, as you said, with the organization and what it's trying to do. And if you get that wrong, it can really kind of set people against you, and you can create a them and us attitude. And I think it's really, really important. So yeah, even though it's not maybe you know, kind of earth-shatteringly, novel conclusion, I still think it's worth reinforcing.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to the same challenge in all industries, which is people work through their career, get better and better at their job, and then all of a sudden they're a manager and they're not actually doing their job anymore. They are a communicator. They are responsible for delivering change and training and all of these pieces, but they aren't given that support around it that's needed to actually get the most out of them in that role. And we see it the same. Obviously, we've got a team of developers and engineers who, we're a relatively small team of 15 people, so we haven't particularly got a hierarchy. So we don't necessarily take people out of a development role and into management. But it's something we're always very mindful of, is as people get better, they actually get to do the thing they're good at less.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it? And I think the other part of that equation is we don't set them. You know, people will be. I run programs for new managers, and you know, one of the things they often realize is I'm spending all my time in meetings and just talking to people, and I don't seem to be doing any work. And hang on, that's your job now. I'm sorry, that is what a manager does. You know, it's, yes, you've got some sort of you will always have some technical output that you're responsible for, but you know, I think the data often says about 70% of your time when you're a manager is spent actually talking to people, and so you need to be damn good at it, because it's kind of fundamental to your success now. And but nobody ever kind of sets them up for that. They have this vision in their mind that they're going to be, you know, kind of doing something, even though the people who manage them, if they sort of observe them, probably would realize that actually they seem to be spending a lot of time in meetings. But yeah.
Absolutely. And that's something, as running a business like I do, I find that you just start to get good at something, and then you have to take that hat off and give it to somebody else, something new again, where you find the next gap. And
yeah,
I'm sure the same rings true for lots of internal comms professionals, which is you might have just felt like you've just got good at writing, you really found your craft, and the next thing you know, you've got a team of people doing that for you, and you've kind of find what the next challenge is, which
and you've
is
got to let go. Yeah,
exactly. Which is easier said than done sometimes, but equally all part of the journey.
Absolutely. Well, let's go on to the fourth part of your conclusions, and I think there'll be a huge I can imagine people throwing their hats in the air and cheering at this conclusion, because I think it's one thing that I still hear time and time again is this over reliance on email. And I'm talking about that more from the kind of recipient's perspective, I guess, from the rather than the sender's perspective. So an over-reliance on email, and, you know, it's something we've been talking about for a long time, but we just can't seem to let go, can we? We just can't seem to, you know, take ourselves away from the addiction of sending lots of emails. And, you know, we all complain about it, and then we all kind of look at our outboxes or what we've sent during the day, we'll probably find that we've been outputting hundreds of emails. So therefore, you know, should we be that stuffy about receiving them? So what were some of the things that came back on that, Ben?
Yeah, I think a big bit is, of course, at the front line, as we've covered, it's not their job to be looking at their inbox all day long. But for people that are sat at a desk all day, it's so easy just to send out that email to lots of people all at once with very little repercussions. I say little repercussions because if you remember a few years ago, the NHS sent an email to everybody in the NHS by accident. and then when everyone started replying saying, should this have been sent to me, it then broke the NHS's emails for a few days whilst they unpicked that mess. So there are still repercussions, but in that moment of clicking send, you don't necessarily feel like there are going to be. So from the report, I think it came up that this was just something that is still happening. And I think there's occasionally that lack of consideration for that person at the front line. A thing that we do in the marketing world is to actually build out kind of personas of who are we sending out our messages to. And that was a piece that we feel that internal communication teams should consider a bit more. So actually have a persona for your part-time worker who might be with you 4 hours a week. Are they going to feel overwhelmed if we've sent 50 emails to them over the last 7 days in between their shifts? So that was a bit that came up quite a lot. In particular, a retail store that had an issue with their till system, and they were doing a great job in communicating that to the front line. They wanted to make sure that, like, they knew that it was being looked at, what to do in the meantime. So every time they thought of something new, they should tell the teams in store. They would send another email. So you can imagine, we know the first one is, oh, we know there's an issue with the till system, we're working on it. Then another one saying, in the meantime, please use this process. And then, oh, we think it should be fixed in 3 hours. Oh no, it's actually going to be tomorrow. Now, if we go back to that persona of that person working 4 hours part-time, they come back and there might be 30, 40 emails all about one particular issue that aren't even relevant anymore.
No.
Like the till system's working when they walk into that. But of course, in their inbox, there might be an important communication that you did want them to read. And that's now buried and lost.
Yeah. Definitely resonates. And, you know, kind of people who kind of almost send a separate email for each line of their thinking because they're just sending it as they're thinking, which, you know, rather than sort of thinking or taking time to put it together into, one thought through piece. It's because people are doing it on the fly, aren't they? That's the beauty of email, is you get it out of your head and into somebody else's head or into their inbox before you forget it, and you don't have to write it on your to-do list, and you know you've got a record of that you've sent it to them, all the things that the boxes the email ticks. But on the downside of that is the recipient is just there's no consideration for them. So what are some of the things, you know, the conclusions from that? Because it's something, like you say, we've been going around the houses on this for goodness knows long, probably as long as email's been around, but certainly, you know, in the last sort of 10, 15 years, that kind of exponential growth in the amount that we seem to be receiving, and that expectation that, you know, because you've sent it on an email, everybody knows it now. What are some of the things that you kind of found or discussed that might start to break that cycle, Ben?
Yeah, so a big thing we've seen, which has been helpful for us, is obviously we have an internal comms app for frontline teams.
Yeah.
And as part of that, actually, we've seen organizations moving away from the email approach and having a trusted home for their communications away from all of the noise has been quite powerful. I think it's very tempting for head office teams who would want to send out a communication to head office just to send out the same communication across the organization. And by having a bit more of a firewall between the two gives them a chance to think, actually, what should we send differently to the front line? And a big part of that is making sure everything's targeted a lot more. So obviously with email, you can build up loads of distribution lists, but ultimately I think people end up getting a bit enthusiastic and just sending it to, oh, it might be useful for this person to know, so I'll just include all of our frontline retail teams, and then 10,000 people have got some information that they didn't need. All the way up to actually, obviously, if you move things away from email, you have the ability to archive them when they're no longer relevant. You've got the ability to update them as things change as well. So instead of having that kind of 20 or so emails going out about the till system being broken, you have one kind of living document that you can update. Staff can keep referencing it, looking at it, a bit like how like the Guardian or BBC News will have that kind of breaking news where they've just got a live feed they keep updating, as opposed to having to put out 20 headlines to cover one issue. So
yeah,
that's been really powerful. And I say the archiving as well, thinking, will this be relevant for our 4-hour part-time employee when they come in on Saturday? If the answer is no, archive it off. And when they start their shift, they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, I mean, those four areas, I think, Ben, all of them are very, very, you know, there's nothing in there that's kind of abstract or really, you know, they're all kind of really grounded in, I think, I, you know, totally agree with you in the in the sort of areas that really mostly affect and are the biggest concern for frontline employees or people communicating with frontline employees. Just before we wrap up, I mean, was there anything else that you maybe, because I appreciate that's a lot of hard work goes into kind of clustering together all those different comments and conversations you'll have had and finding themes and recurring themes. Were there any other themes that didn't get into the report, but were still things that people spoke about when it comes to frontline employees?
I'm glad you asked that, because there was one key point that really stuck with me, which was one of the people that we interviewed, an internal comms professional for a big group of social housing across America. She shared that we don't have to communicate everything and we don't have to have an opinion on everything that's happening in the world. I think there's often the pressure to think, oh, this big thing's just happened. We need to make sure that we let our staff know we're aware it's happened and we're dealing with it. And I'm thinking more kind of geopolitical events as opposed to issues within the business itself. So she said that they've got a really hard line on, we don't need to communicate about these issues. We make sure we've got frameworks of support that are in place for their teams to be able to handle those. And for me, that just made a lot of sense. So you don't feel like you effectively have to be a secondary news outlet giving the business's view on it. You're just saying, look, there's lots going on in the world right now. We've got all of these kind of frameworks to support you. If you need them, please lean on them. We're here to help you, but without having to have a speak everything.
Yeah. Have an opinion on everything and a line on everything. And, we've sent a comms out about that. Yeah. I think you also asked people about what are some of the things that need to stop happening in IC? What were some of the things that they came back with on that?
Yeah, so one of them was around the crisis communications. As I just covered, the big one was still email. Everyone said email. I think it was by the end of our third interview, we were like, email's definitely still a problem.
That one had gone away, but yeah.
So those were like some of the key ones. And I'd be keen to know, Craig, what's your view on that one? I mean, you speak to lots of internal comms people. You're an expert. I'd love to get your view.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, and whether it's frontline or you know, non-frontline, I think one of the things I regularly hear is that we've got too many, and I know you talked about this earlier about, you know, omni and multi-channel. I think often I hear we've just got too many, it's too fragmented. We've got a Teams group for this. We've got an app for this. We have this all comes via email. Then we've got this that comes via Teams. It was almost like, all the stuff we need to know, it's almost like you've got to remember where to go for all different pieces of information rather than having, and I know it's as simple, and I know your app might be a solution to it, but it's not, whether it's as simple as having a one-stop shop, but it was just, the actual content itself is very diverse and, sometimes hard to take in and think about and process. But makes made even more difficult by the fact that I've got to try and remember where I've got to go and find that piece of information, or where I'm going to collaborate with people on this particular project. And I know I experience it. I've got clients who use, and you have to kind of yield to their requirements. We've got a Google Drive for documents here. Some people email you a Word document. Some people will, set up a Teams folder. Some people have it on OneDrive or Trello, and you've kind of got all these multiple sources of where stuff is, and you just kind of lose track of it. And I'm one for kind of trying to keep everything consistent and in one place. That's just the way my brain works. But so I overly empathize with people who talk about that, but that's definitely an area that I hear people talking about quite often.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And some ways I think the frontline can be at an advantage there, which is that they don't have corporate access to a lot of the tools at the time. So they're almost shielded from it, and that can help bring in some best practices, but then they often have email, so it can bring back some bad practices as well. And that's where I think I'd lean back on the having a trusted resource and then using omnichannel as a chance of actually almost promoting that. And that's where, for me, as I might have mentioned with the kind of iPhone billboard approach, it's use the omnichannel as a way of signposting people back to a trusted resource, as opposed to treating it as you can read the same information in 10 different places. But guess what? It might be slightly different in each place. And then you start finding out, half the team are doing something one way and half the team are doing it the other way, and you have to try and find your way back.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, look, Ben, that's been fantastic. So let's just, before we wrap up, let's just find out a little bit more about how our listeners can find out more about the report and, more importantly, get their hands on the report. So I'm going to put these links into the show notes, which are on our website version of this podcast. So if you're listening to this on iTunes, you need to head across to thebigpicturepeople.co.uk and go to the podcast tab, and you'll find the show notes for this episode and also any of our previous episodes as well. But just in case you forget that, and you're more likely to remember a URL, Ben has very kindly put together a bit.ly URL. So if you're familiar with the bit.ly, bit.ly/frontline24. That's all one word, frontline24, no hyphens. And that, again, we will put that link into our show notes so you can find that. And Ben, is it okay if I put a link to your LinkedIn profile as well, in case people want to reach out and communicate with you directly?
Yeah, of course, more than happy to do that. So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Ben Collier from Acasta. You'll be able to find us there. And again, just send me a message if you want a copy of the report and you can't quite remember the bit.ly URL, I'll send it over.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Oh, that, look, Ben, that has been so good, so interesting. As I said, it's a topic we have touched upon before, but it's so deep and so wide. I think there's so many things that you can talk about. And again, it's such a critical area, I think, in even in today's age where we assume everybody's kind of working from home, sat in front of a laptop, is still huge amounts of people who aren't, and that we need to make sure are fully engaged. And I think, as you alluded to earlier, the kind of for a lot of organizations, it's our touch point with our customers. So really important that we get this right. And I'm really, really pleased you've done this this excellent piece of work into it, Ben.
Well, thank you, Craig. It's been great speaking.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks, Ben. And who knows, next time you produce your next piece of output and your next piece of thought leadership, we might get you on the show again and go through that with you.
Perfect. As long as everyone stops using email, then we'll have something new to talk about.
That's right. Definitely. Thanks, Ben. All the best. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.